The ACN podcast is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners and sponsors, including the Agile Alliance. As a nonprofit membership organization, the Agile Alliance is an excellent resource to help you along your Agile journey. To learn more about the Agile Alliance and our other sponsors, as well as how you can become a sponsor or supporter of our show, please visit acnpodcast.org for more information. And thank you for your support. Good morning and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Agile Coaching Network. This is episode 87 as we start 2024. I am incredibly excited to get going on a whole new year. We've got a couple of great topics that we're going to go discuss today. If this is your first time on the Agile Coaching Network, we do have co-hosts here. We have Shauna, Diana, Jorg, Sheila Eckhart, Sheila McGrath, Hendrik, and all of you. We are a listener and sponsor-supported show. We just had a renewal that took place, Agile Alliance, who's been a longtime sponsor of this podcast. Really appreciate their efforts and appreciate the funding that they give us, as well as others who give either in-kind support. My co-hosts, we all do this for free with the goal of making our community better. So if you like our mission, the best thing that you could do to keep the ACN going over 2024 is, one, subscribe to the podcast, because more subscribers help us to attract more sponsors. Also, becoming a supporting member of New Agility. And New Agility is the organization that is underneath all of this. It is a social enterprise dedicated to doing things like the ACN, different types of programs that we do in order to be able to produce and raise the knowledge within the industry. So please join others and support us. You can learn more at acnpodcast.org. One last plug, if you haven't made your submissions to Agile 2024, and this is the Agile Alliance's big conference that they do every year, you only got days. Go ahead and submit. And I understand that it's monumental to go do this. Keep in mind, the reviewers are pretty good at looking at your submission. And if you're a first-time presenter, or for whatever reason, your proposal needs a little bit more polish, they'll contact you and give you input on these things. So I strongly advise, get your submission in if you want to go present at this year's event. You've got until the 31st, and I think it's midnight Central Time. No matter what your reason is, don't expect that after that date, you're going to be able to get it in. So go to agilealliance.org and look for more details on that. So kicking off the new year, I was teaching a class on leadership about a week ago, and a lot of subject matter started digging into what are the cool leadership traits that help to build a customer-centric organization. And there are a lot of different ways that you can approach the leadership style that you have, whether or not, and I'm referring to leader in the bigger context. It doesn't mean that you're a leader where you're in a positional power spot within the organization. You could be a leader leading change across the organization with no positional power. But there are certain traits that these individuals have that help them to maneuver change within their organization or to just get even projects delivered. And if you think from a customer perspective, if we put that lens, and Agile is a very customer-centric type of culture that we're creating, what are those key common things that we can go pull out that as a leader, if I'm learning up to be a leader of an organization, what are those traits that we should have? As well as on the opposite side of that, which is if I am the person being led, what are the things that are motivating me? What are the things that are inspiring me? What are the things that are promoting me to work as a team? What are those core components that are there? The original principles of the Agile Manifesto, way back when, actually was broken down into three buckets. They said slanted towards customers, slanted towards managers, and slanted towards the team. And there were a few that were, four of them in particular, that they were picked for leaders and managers. And by the way, this designation dropped when they did the final copy of this. But they originally had building projects around motivated individuals. They had the most effective communication as the ones that we do face-to-face. Working software is the primary measurement of progress. And I'm sorry, there was actually five, not four. And then the last one is that Agile processes, it should be sustainable, which means that we should be able to develop something and not go on a death march we want it to be a sustainable pace that the team can go on so that you do not burn people out. And through my own work, looking at agile adoption styles and teams that were successful, I looked at actually three leadership categories. One, the expert-based leader, which I happened to grow up in an expert leadership culture as I was cutting my teeth in management as well as leadership, which expert-based leaders, they tend to be more, of course, leading as the smart person in the room, the person who knows the system architecture, the one who knows the ins and outs of what's being delivered. They are the expert, and they lead from a stance of that expertise. The second type of style is the achiever-based leader, which is the person who's driving the organization to get something delivered. Now, both of those have some negative traits associated to them, especially when you're doing wider adoption type of work or transformation work. The achiever leaders tend to not look at the people sometimes. They're trying to rush to the goal, and they're not going to let anything stand in their way. They're going to push heavy. And so they don't care about sustainable pace. They don't care about some of the qualities that we said in the Agile principles, because those might be standing in their way of getting to that goal. The expert leaders also tend to not be very inclusive to some of the people who they don't consider to be experts as well. So they tend to be maybe exclude some people from conversations because they don't perceive you as the expert. We did a survey of about 300 leaders and determined that the worst possible style for a healthy work environment was the achiever style. The achiever tended to not get the results or get the teams to being higher performing. The one that actually was is the one I haven't talked about yet, which is the catalyst leader. These are the people who lead with visions. They're much more inclusive. They form teams. They want to make sure that those teams are healthy in order to accomplish those goals. Not to go long-winded on this, because I want to get your guys' impression of these things. And I brought up three archetypes that are possible there. But I want to know from you, what do you think that the key leadership traits are for building and maintaining a healthy customer-centric organization? What are those? How are you growing these traits for yourself? I know that from going from an expert-based leader to, you know, moving myself slowly towards a catalytic-based leadership style, that took me years, because there's a lot of things that were holding me back, one being just how everyone else acted in the leadership around me. But how do you move yourself to these traits that are going to help you to be more successful? And then the last one, how do you grow these traits in others? A lot of what we do in Agile coaching is we're coaching others to hit these types of goals, to grow these types of traits. What are your techniques that you're using in order to help that occur? With that, let's see. Diane, do you want to kick us off on this?
I did just write a book that came out about a little over a year ago called Lead Without Blame, Building Resilient Learning Teams. And so my point of view on this has a lot to do with the capability of a leader to build and to create and sustain an environment where people can continually learn the new things they need to be learning to do the best possible job they can do so that they can achieve the outcomes that they and the organization want. People have a drive for achievement, for getting things done, for seeing results. And so when leaders are not creating an environment for that, people are unhappy. And we've heard a lot about the importance of employee engagement and so on. And everybody has their favorite Drucker quotes. But one of my favorite Drucker quotes, Peter Drucker quotes, is I'm paraphrasing here, the main job of management seems to be getting in the way of people getting things done. And that's what we have to watch out for. I've been very interested lately in an area of study in sort of organizational psychology and so on called self-determination theory. And it's about people who have the who have a sense that they have a control over their work lives and that they have the teams that have a sense of autonomy, and how those are higher performing people and teams, and that when they are led by someone who is a controlling or domineering leader, it suppresses their performance. Whereas if they have a leader that is more interested in showing them how to be have more autonomy and is supportive of their efforts to get things done, they tend to perform better under those leaders. In our book, Lead Without Blame, we actually highlight four what we call learning leader traits that we think help people stay in that autonomous, supportive leadership path. And it's having the courage to say, I don't know, to step out of that expert role and be able to say, this is new territory. Let's go learn about it together and lead the discovery of the things that we don't know yet. Living in the world we live in now, we can't know it all anymore. Even if we knew it all when we were hired, we don't know it all now. And so that's having the courage to see that and learn to work within that is key. And then because people need to be continuous learners now, the next trait that we focus on is compassion. It's hard to be learning. It's hard not to know. It's hard to sometimes, some of us have had difficult experiences in school, so that the idea of learning is holds some tension for us. And having the compassion to wait through a learning curve while people get the skills that they need is really important. And then once you've seen that people are learning and are contributing and want to get things done, then having the confidence in the team and expressing the confidence in the team that no matter what life throws at them, they're going to be able to learn their way through it and come out well on the other side. And then finally, we talk about complexity, just understanding that we live in a, VUCA world. We live in a complex world, and that's going to take some different behaviors than what we used when we thought the world was more predictable and stable. How I grow those traits in myself is I'm just constantly asking my question of when I'm in a leadership role, what does this situation need from me right now? How, do the people I'm working with have the environment that they need to do the work they need? How do I know? Who am I talking to about that? How am I getting that information? How am I doing with my peers in terms of exhibiting those traits so that my peers are also growing? And then how you help grow those in others is look for the opportunities, find, and particularly for leaders, being a role model, showing that you have no problem saying, gosh, that's a tough problem. I don't really know how to solve that one now, but I'm willing to go with you to figure it out. And sort of role modeling that intention toward learning, I think, is hugely important. There's a well-known management consultant named Chip Bell who wrote a whole article called Great Leaders Learn Out Loud. And I think that's a key trait, and you help people, other people grow those traits by role modeling them, by being out loud with your learning and with your compassion and your confidence and so on with the people that you're working with.
Those are all great. I'm curious, when trying to grow yourself into that space to embrace the things that you're talking about, what if the environment around you doesn't value those? Can you find that you're trying to grow a particular direction, you're not matching the rest of the leadership styles that are around the organization? How do you survive?
That's actually one of the first challenges that ever came up in the Agile world in conversation. And I believe it was Martin Fowler, though it might have been Mike Beadle, it might have been one of those other guys, who said, change your organization or change your organization. So have some inquiry, check in. Is there some possibility here for me to be a really good leader that's going to help people perform? Or if there is no possibility of that, if I'm blocked at every turn, where else can I go and exhibit those kinds of leadership things that help me feel good about myself and the people I'm working with? I think that that is key. And the more that we all hang around in toxic organizations, the more we are giving those organizations permission to persist. And I know that's a tough one because people need their jobs and they need their benefits from their jobs and they've got kids in college or whatever. But that I have not found another solution for that. I'd love to hear one, but I have not found one.
Yeah, I'll be honest. A year ago, I walked away from a fairly good paying job because of exactly that. It was hard, but I knew that was slowly eating me alive. And I couldn't deal with that. And recently, I just had a friend who sent me a text message, as a matter of fact, a day ago, and they said that they've made the same choice. Yeah. They're leaving their job as well, and they can't stomach it anymore. So I think sometimes moving is the option. And I'm also curious as well to the people here that, do you have a suggestion of a better way than that? Is there another path that you can take? Thank you. Hendrik, Happy New Year, my friend.
Yeah, Happy New Year. And I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you here. So what do you have on this?
I think Diana already mentioned a lot of good things. What can I add? From my own leadership experience, I would say an important thing is it's also very much about ego control and understanding your own psychology, because leaders are human beings. leadership is a very psychological thing in the sense that there's a lot of myths, a lot of expectations and things that you need to almost resist the pressure sometimes that there are on the leader. Like, leaders have all the answers. No, you don't. But standing in the front of a large crowd and saying, I don't know, is actually a very scary thing. And that is one of those things you need to learn. Also, this whole thing around what are your own preferences and stepping back from your own preferences and stay curious to listen to others. This is something that, depending on what leadership environment you grew up, you are not used to do. And it takes quite some courage to hold your breath and let others take the space. So in a nutshell, it's also holding yourself back, understanding yourself, your emotions, and being able to navigate through this and then enable participation of the people. Now, so we want, of course, people to participate in the question of how can we make our customers happy? How can we deliver great value to our customers? And there is not the one wise person. And for that, we need to activate the people. And as a leader, Diana mentioned that we need to create the environment for doing all these things. And one thing is really when, for example, in my organization, when I thought about organizational design, it's not necessarily just the managers who are participating in decision making. I invite much, much more people. But of course, you also need to design it in some way. So I always ask myself the question, who needs to talk to whom about what at what frequency? Yep. That is, for me, the driving principle to think, okay, who do we need to advance in a certain aspect? And who we need, that might be some leaders, but there might be also subject matter experts and so on. And then creating the space in form of meetings or communities and so on, where these people can meet and exchange ideas and so on. That's one important part of it. So as a leader, you create those spaces. And then when people encounter each other, you know how it is. When people meet, there might be disagreements and so on. The next thing is creating the space where people can actually disagree and still live with each other. And that seems to be sometimes an especially big challenge in today's world. This whole notion of, I always call this being caringly confrontative. So speaking up on things, addressing the elephant in the room, or saying, you really lost me there. I don't understand it. Or coming up with different perspectives. Do it in a way where you show that you are caring for the result and for the people that are with you on the journey and stay curious. And I think that's also a leadership trait, to create these environments happen.
That's great advice. I think the one thing that I think both you and Diana stated, I think, is the right leader steps up at the right time. And I remember sitting down with a gentleman, and his name is slipping my mind, so I apologize. I don't remember his name, but he was an Army Ranger, and he was stationed in Mogadishu, and he was a part of that whole Black Hawk Down, if you've ever watched that movie. And one of the things that he emphasized in leadership training that the U.S. Army does is that they understand that sometimes you get cut off in command and the right leader is going to step up. And it was more about not just how you lead, but how do you yield leadership? How do you yield and say that now I'm going to give leadership to this person? Curious in your ways, because you've been managing and leading for a long time, how do you do that? How do you yield and step back?
The thing is, it's not you give the leadership to someone. It's rather you allow others to lead.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a very important, that's from a mindset, a very important thing. I have seen leader, and when I was a young leader, I was also falling into that trap that someone else wanted to start leading. And I said, wait a second, I'm the boss here. And then you start interrupting people. And that's, of course, wrong. Instead, you should think, okay, yeah, this is interesting. Somebody steps up. How can I support this person now? This dance between leading where you are needed and then also stepping back and let others lead. This doesn't reduce the respect that people have for you. It rather increases the respect people have for you if you are able to do that.
Awesome. If you had to compare it to a dance style, what would be the dance style? You don't have to answer that.
What is a dance style? Actually, it's more like a disco dance you could play where you inspire others and you get inspired by other people's movements. So sometimes you copy the movements and some people copy the movements from you.
Awesome. Let's see. Dennis, you have your hand up. What do you have on this?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. All of these ideas are bringing back memories of some of the early discussions about the way that organization culture works. I like your list of the three different kinds of leaders. And I think a lot of this has to do with communications. Who talks to whom in the team, right? Now, it's an idea that Jim Copeland talked about and Neil Harrison in their patterns book on Agile. The idea of circulation domain, how do people work together? An expert leader has the message to the team members, you should only talk to me. I can give you everything you need. An achiever leader, it's don't talk with anyone, just work. But a catalyst leader is more in the position of you should be talking to everybody. Mm. Even as Heinrich points out, even talk with people that you disagree with. So as a leader, I think what you have to do is try to build the culture of collaboration within your team. If you're going to be, I don't care what style you are, hey, make sure that collaboration actually happens. Actually model that behavior. Be the person who communicates with everybody. And the third thing is be a connector. Don't just... If somebody says, oh, I need the answer to this, don't just be the person who gives the answer. No, you should say, oh, you should talk to Joe. You should talk to Sarah. Be a connector to actually get people to work together. That's my point.
No, those are awesome points. One of the things I always look at, like my social media or my LinkedIn, which I have lots and lots of people on there, thousands, is that if I type a question in, somebody's going to refer me to somebody who knows. Either they know or they're going to refer me to somebody who knows. And I think that's very powerful. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Let's see, Jorg, are you there?
Yeah, I am. And I've heard so many good things. So I'm thinking what I have to add. And maybe I'll try to be rather extremely concrete with a few things that help me lead or grow others into leaders, which is not a big difference in a lot of situations. One thing I actually picked up from you, Ray, at least in a conscious way, is actually stepping back in the physical sense of the word, leaving the room or the table and just being not available. So the people have to solve the thing themselves. And if they don't, they still have the option to come ask for help, but it's, again, their decision. So they know that they can't always depend on me to get their problem solved. And that can be a very powerful thing. And sometimes you need to endure a very long silence. But that the message is clear that it's not about me afterwards. So that matters. Definitely another thing I like to do to get people's imagination is telling stories of what I've seen or heard or felt in the past. Not so much to say, do it like this, because that never works. You can't just copy an old situation, but to give the inspiration to look into a certain direction. That kind of discussion might be helpful because it has helped me in that situation, which is not exactly what you have. I can acknowledge this, but it's similar enough. So what do you think? And that helps a lot. And I've come across a book, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name, which is mainly about children of geniuses and whether they succeed or fail. And they very often fail in life, or at least to a degree fail, because their parents don't tell them that they ever struggled. So that is one thing I really consciously tried to do, to tell people where I struggle or have struggled in the past. So they don't assume, oh, that's a guy up there, he knows how agile works and how we can get the things solved. So I'll never get there. And they need to see that I failed on my way, have struggled, and have had tremendous support from tremendous leaders in my past. And by that, give them a vision that it's not as hard as it seems. It's just continuity and don't give up grit that you need. These are some things. In addition, maybe addressing a strength. You will be surprised if you mention to people, I see your strengths in that direction because I've seen you do things like this, that a lot of people say, I've never noticed, I look for this, and you see them double their performance just from being aware that what they're doing is not average and being inspired by that.
That is awesome advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Scott, you have your hand up.
Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Scott.
Yeah, I was thinking back in with what everybody's said so far, and some of the things that I've tried to do with teams and create containers to get everybody's viewpoints on the team, or even larger groups of folks in running things, different liberating structures like 1-2-4-all or World Cafes, and things like that, to try to provide containers that are non-threatening, where folks can come in and feel like they can talk and share their opinions on things. And now we can do a debrief afterwards and see if we can come out in a better spot than where we started.
I like that. So when you talk with people who don't know where to find liberating structures, where should they go to find these patterns?
There is a LISA app, LISA, that you can download that has all of the current liberating structures. There's also a book, Henry Lipmanowitz and Keith McCandless, I'm not sure. They wrote a book on liberating structures a few years back. They have probably 50 different liberating structures, and it talks about different scenarios of how you knit those together to where you can take a scenario and maybe do two or three different liberating structures. And again, it's just a way to, you know, get the power of the people kind of thing, where I'm not sitting there as an agile expert or whatever, saying, this is my thought on it. So I don't have a thought at all. I have a question, and I'm going to pose that question out to 50 people in a World Cafe, or three different questions, and let them come up with what they think and let them have conversations. Open space is another great one. So it just gives everybody a chance to, and it gives them different ways too. They can write stuff down on stickies. They can talk about it. They can have conversations with folks. So it gives people a different ways to communicate. And so you're giving opportunities to lots of people to get their opinions, and then trying to share those with, and I shared those with upper management in the past to say, hey, look, we're doing this down at the team level. We could do this as an organization and use liberating structures to get the input from everybody at the company around different things, different topics. And so trying to manage up it with some of this stuff to try to help the organization as a whole.
Thank you for that. I remember one time I was in an organization that had mostly type A people, meaning that these are the people who jump in and just start problem solving from the very start. And the people who are not type A's tend to sit back and think about things in a different perspective. And yeah, the liberating structures that you bring up and the idea of getting the whole room thinking about something is, I think, incredibly important. Use the organizational brain. But I remember this one thing. You had to go protect the egg. You had this egg drop where you had straws and tape and you had to use this stuff together. And I remember the type A's all just diving into this whole thing. And I was facilitating at the time of this thing. And of course, the egg failed. And this one person was off by themselves. They actually literally did not listen to that person. And I asked that individual, have you ever done this before? And they said, yes, I've done this multiple times. He was a Boy Scout leader. And so they did this in Boy Scout. But nobody consulted him, which is surprising as anything. So you got to remember that there could be somebody at the table who actually has the answer, and it doesn't have to be you or that aggressive group. Sheila, Happy New Year. You there?
Yep. Happy New Year. Yeah, I was thinking about, I've always worked on things that were cutting edge at the time. A lot of them are obsolete now. But when you're doing that, you have to say, I don't know, but I'll find out or I'll ask around. But I also know that if I have a dumb question, what I think is a dumb question, and I ask it, invariably somebody else comes up to me afterwards and says, I'm so glad you asked, because I thought I was the only one that was confused. So I've always been inclined to ask those kinds of questions. The other thing I think, if somebody's saying the emperor has no clothes, then you've got to go with, okay, when did you notice? What do you think we should do about that? Just move on from there, not worry about this is going against whatever the corporate culture is, and try to move forward and figure out how to fix it. Or does it even really need to be fixed? Maybe it's fine that the emperor has no clothes. Maybe nobody cares and it isn't relevant. With teams, even if I think I know what the answer is, I'm going to ask the people on the team, where do you think we need to go? And how do you think we should go about getting there? Now, they may have a different idea of where we're even going, and their idea might be better. And if we are all headed in the same direction, or if they're going off on a tangent that's not going to get us where we need to go, then we do a course correction, but it still needs to be something where they have input. Because if I tell them this is what we're going to do and I'm giving them direction, they're going to do it, but they're not going to have any ownership of it. If I ask them what they think we should do and they bring in their own ideas and we do some brainstorming and we don't critique, at least initially, every little thing that they say, even if we know it makes no sense, but we whittle it down from there, then this was their idea. They came up with it. They have a vested interest in it succeeding. So when I look at organizations that are saying, oh, that's not the way we do things here, I just keep thinking, okay, those organizations aren't going to be around in the long run if that's the way they're going to think, especially as the pace of change keeps increasing. So they're really telling me that if I want to be doing something useful in the future, I probably need to start looking around for how to get out of here. But I wouldn't do that first. I would try to figure out why they feel that way, at what level. If you're trying to implement something and management, upper management isn't behind it, it's probably not going to succeed because so many people want to do what they think management wants them to do. Mm-hmm. So you really have to convince management, like senior management and the C-suite, of why this is something that's a good thing and get their input. And I think the other thing is people at that level tend to oversimplify. So it can be a real challenge to educate them if you're trying to make any kind of a concrete change. And usually you have to spoon feed it. You can't And you can't tell them that you're telling them anything they don't already know, because they know it all. So you have to be subtle about the way you present it, so that you are somehow saying something like, you know this already, but, and then lay something out for them in a simple way. And not try to, it's the same as when you introduce Agile to a team in general. When you're talking to managers, it's the same concept, that if you try to get them to do everything at once, it's probably not going to work. If you introduce concepts as it organically seems necessary, and you make changes as they seem to be appropriate, then they don't even realize that they've moved from where they were to where they are in the future. It just happened. But I think that's the beauty of Agile, is that it's not something that's static, that it evolves. And what I've always heard from so many people is, if they're doing the same thing in 6 months, they're not really Agile, because Agile does evolve. I know when I've gone into new organizations or on new projects, I put up a straw man and I just go, okay, what have I got wrong and what am I missing? And for a minute or so, you can hear a pin drop. And then they realize I'm serious and people start engaging. Another thing that I think is really important is, you can't just talk to the core team. You have to have discussions at some level with everyone in the organization that's going to be impacted, at least their representatives. And a lot of times they don't even realize they're going to be impacted. So you have to figure out how they're going to be impacted and get them engaged. And that goes back to the old, what's in it for me? What's in it for them? What are they going to get out of this? Or if they don't get on board, what are they going to get dumped on them that they're not going to like? Whichever way you think will work, to try to make sure that you're getting their input and involvement, not just input, but actual involvement, so that the whole organization is responsive.
I think one of the most brilliant rollouts of a new objective for the organization that I used to work for. And the leader came out, and instead of putting what I would consider to be a very well-polished corporate PowerPoint presentation about what this objective was going to be, they wheeled out a whiteboard and the person wrote it on the board in very low fidelity. We're thinking about this. And then opened it up for audience comments. And as it was going through, he was writing down these other ideas. And I find that when an idea is presented at very high fidelity, with looks like I can't change that, they basically painted that on the wall. I think that definitely helps quite a bit. So I thank you for that, about as far as how to bring something in and getting people buy and getting their input into it. And yes, I do believe they own that better. Let's see. Joanna, Happy New Year.
Hi, Happy New Year. Good to hear you again.
It is. I missed hearing myself.
We're all in luck then. There was something I want to go back to. There's a theme that both, I think, Hendrik and Jorg mentioned, this idea of stepping back. And so for me, when we're thinking about being customer-centric, I found it's important to recognize when we have context and information that our customers don't have, right? So when we're making decisions about how to serve them, we really need to put ourselves in their place and try to step back from what we already know. And that can be really hard to do because we know it. So how do you forget something you already know and it's just part of your kind of everyday loop that you're living in? That's terrible. But so there's skill in recognizing that you're caught up in your own context and being able to step back from that and make decisions without information that you already have, and then also being able to pull others back as well so that they can see from really the customer perspective of not looking at this product every day, right? If we're just a couple minutes of any person's given day, they're not going to know the product as well as we do. So that's what I've been thinking about.
No, that's pretty good. I'm curious along that point. Do you practice Scrum within your organization?
I don't know what we practice, right?
I guess my point was going to be on that is that I've noticed a lot of Scrum teams do not bring a customer into a demo at all.
Mm, yeah.
And it's surprising to me that there's this, we can't show this to the customer yet. Yes, you can. It's probably a good time to go show them. And I know a lot of organizations don't do that. And I think that they need to. Interesting. And this is for all of us. Karen posted a question asked about, because early on when we were talking about how do leaders that drive people away remain in place? And kind of curious on what type of efforts do you make to one, trying to still continue to not get pushed away? And then when do you make that sort of that choice that, okay, it's time to move on? I'm curious on that. And Karen, if you want to raise your hand or I can activate your microphone if you want me to give more context, if you want to give more context to that. Oh, Karen raised her hand. Let's see here. Hi, Karen. Did I get that right?
Yes. So yeah, you are so skilled. I thought that maybe sharing what you do and having this great audience with us, maybe they could give us other things to do. I was in a situation like you were, and it's, oh, you floated idea. Let's get a collaborative resolution of identifying this issue and how to resolve it. Oh, no, we're the experts. We can't do that. And I thought that was a few years ago. Maybe people, leaders aren't like that, but then you come up and you said last year this happened to you. So I'm just curious, what did you do? How did they respond? And I'm just wondering if other people in our group would have any other things to do other than flee.
Yeah. I found that, and I've worked at a lot of places where there's the dominant sort of the main culture, and then there's subcultures that get set up. That can happen between sites. Organizations might behave differently if I'm in here in Oregon where I live, or down in the Bay Area, or maybe in Germany or other places. So there's a sort of site context that's there. And a long time ago, when I was reading Cotter's work about creating guiding coalitions, that whole coalition of the willing, meaning I'm not going to go change everyone in this organization, but I'm going to get a coalition of the willing that want to work on this. It's no different than the ACN has 4,000 people who signed up for it. It's a guiding coalition of let's go improve Agile. And it to me, let's work with the people who want to work together. Now, those other people still need to be addressed. But the question is, do those people, are they in a particular power situation, or are they in a particular place where they are trying to take all the pieces, meaning they're trying to influence people not joining the guiding coalitions. They're trying to influence in a way where they're blocking access to people. And there's a point when you say that, okay, part of leading is about, we need to get people going, leading together towards a direction. And there's a certain point when you got to say that, okay, this is diminishing returns. And then you step away, but you try to include, you try to explain, you try to teach, you try to show data. You do what you try to do when you're trying to influence people along a particular path. And it's funny because there's still a group of people back in that old job that are still influenced by the things that I said and the things that they are continuing to do. They just went underground. They will not do it in the, I'm not going to share that I'm doing it this way because I know that I might get my head chopped off or bring attention to me. And I'm curious.
So have you ever come or deal with the neuroscience of habitual ways of thinking, like with the person that drove you away? That's, I guess that's what I would be curious, as you just shared.
Well, I'll be honest with the neuroscience that I looked at this individual is that they were a narcissist.
Oh, there you go.
And they definitely were, as Hendrik, and Hendrik, you're welcome to join in on this, but I'm not saying Hendrik's a narcissist, but the overall, when you know that this person is probably going to be a very hard to change individual, you even try to maneuver it where you get others on this. If you get the people that they're peers with. You try to get them converted towards it, and then they also understand to stay clear of that. But there's a certain, again, the cutting bait part on this was just, okay, I don't feel good anymore. But so you try multiple times, you get your hands burnt multiple times, and then you finally say that, look, it's not worth the ulcer.
This has so many facets, this problem. There is, first of all, it could be that it's you and it could be that it's the person. And often it's a combination of two. I've been in situations where I felt I'm simply the wrong person for this organization or to correspond to that manager or leader, because somehow I cannot speak to this person. We don't get each other and we are on different planets. So I'm from Mars, he's from Pluto, and a lot of misunderstandings happen and somehow we don't get together. And I've sometimes then been looking for another coach who can maybe better deal with such a person. That's maybe one thing.
But Andrew, I mean, Pluto's no longer a planet, so he's pissed off already.
If the person is a narcissist, I have a friend who's been married to one for 50 years, then they are dug in deep.
The thing is, whether a person is a narcissist or not, okay, that's of course sad. And the question is, what can we do anyhow? Because the world is maybe full of narcissists. And the question is, what I'm trying to do most of the time is to not make it a confrontation people get the feeling I'm right, you're wrong or whatever. So the question is how to balance this. And often you need to swallow your own ego for a while and see whether you can address such a person in a way that they are starting to either get your perspective or you get them to a point where it seems it was their idea. The best moments were when I had encounters with such strong people, when we ended up side by side on a whiteboard arguing about stuff. And I tried to, via that conversation, see what is this person's language, how do they see the world, and then hook onto that. The problem always is when you are not having the airtime with these people, when they are too far away from you and you cannot really encounter them in a caringly competitive way, then it's very hard. And that is, that's maybe one of those situations where I would say, okay, then maybe better, if it's not healthy for you, find another place maybe.
Mm-hmm. I hate that we...
What's an example of how you hook into their world? I just think that's interesting. If it's a narcissist or the person who's the controller.
So the narcissist, first of all, start reading up. I have been Googling narcissism and these tendencies and how do these people see the world. And you start seeing how to speak to a narcissist and maybe help them moving in some way. But it's a dance on a volcano. If somebody is a real heavy narcissist, it's a dance on a volcano, definitely. It's when you understand how they tick and how you leave them their space or,
I love the dancing on a volcano line. That is awesome. We are at the top of the hour, everyone. I would like to thank everyone who joined in the conversations, the people typing in, and also the people just sitting back and listening to the conversation that really enjoyed it. Hopefully that you will be back with us on February 23rd. That's our next live event. We're also going to be starting to look at and doing things like some lean coffee sessions and other things. So if you haven't been to newagility.com or acnpodcast.org, you can go up and look for those events as they come up. That way we can meet a little bit more through the month. And the ACN podcast is for educational and informative use only. If you'd like to know more about the ACN community, please come up to acnpodcast.org and support our show.